to the Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and joining me tonight, the Queen Maeve to my King of Naive, it's Jamie. Hey, Jamie.
Hello.
How you doing tonight?
Doing just fine.
Well, I'm glad to hear one of us is, and I'm just kidding. Just want to kick off the podcast with a big downer. has not been a fun few days.
No, not really. 2020 in full effect.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we are here to talk about The Boys, you know, the TV show tale of these twisted and corrupt superheroes, but I think we both want to acknowledge that I think we lost an actual superhero this past weekend with the passing of Judge Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I think we were all dismayed about that, not just because of the future of this country and the Supreme Court, because we're not going to go down that, you know, downward spiral in this podcast, but just because, I mean, especially the more you know about her and you learn about her, you realize how impressive and amazing this woman was for several decades. And I think most people, a lot of people I know, we were all, we were teary-eyed. We were literally yes. teary-eyed. I know I was. The two things that got me teary this weekend were the passing of Judge Ginsburg, and then when I was watching the Emmys, and even though I have not yet seen the series, when Catherine O'Hara and Eugene Levy won back-to-back Emmy Awards, and I go back to watching, as a kid, watching SCTV, not to mention their great work in the Christopher Guest movies. I love Catherine O'Hara and Eugene Levy, which is why it's amazing I still have not watched the series yet. So that, even though I don't know much about the show, seeing those two win awards, and they don't have mantelpieces filled with awards like some people do, was really kind of moving for me. So at least it was happy tears instead of sad tears for Judge Ginsburg.
Yep, absolutely. Lots of bad words, yeah. A little bit of crying. Wasn't great news to get.
No, it wasn't. So we had that, and I, like I said, I just mentioned the Emmys, and we're not going to spend really any time talking about the Emmys here, because there's not really much to talk about anyway, because basically the Emmys were dominated by essentially three shows. You know, the first hour was Schitt's Creek, the second hour was Watchmen, and the third hour was Succession. That's pretty much it. You know, a couple few odds and ends in here and there. But I had already said online a month or two ago when the nominations were announced that once it became clear, or not became clear, once you looked at the nominations, you realized, wow, Rhea Seehorn did not get nominated again.
Oh, blah, blah.
And they left out Bob Odenkirk too, which I was like, what? So I already kind of canceled the Emmys in my own mind. And, you know, between that and then the recent ridiculous rules that the Oscars have put out for future Best Picture nominees.
Yeah, I saw that.
Which all I'm going to say is because it's way too much to get into. I mean, if anyone out there has not heard about this or read about it, just Google it online. I don't care how liberal you are, because I'm quite liberal myself, quite frankly. These rules are insane. And I'm hoping that cooler, clearer, wiser heads will prevail and walk some of this, if not all of it, back. It's just as everyone who listens to this podcast knows, the person who's been, you know, my podcast partner for, you know, 80-90% of these podcasts is Dan. Dan is super anti-awards. Understandably. I know a lot of folks like that. I, on the other hand, you know, I grew up, you know, I mean, I studied the Oscars. I was the kid who could basically tell you who the five Best Picture nominees and the winners were, you know, for like 50 years running, as well as, you know, the leading categories. I've gotten really old now. My memory, not so good. But it used to be. And now I'm like, I don't know if I care. I mean, I don't think I was going to care after 2020 anyway, because I don't think it should even count. I don't even think there should be an Oscars next year, because how did anyone see anything? Just by streaming it, please.
Yeah, there's 10 movies that'll be available the entire year to stream, and that's it.
Yeah, it's just, don't get me started. So, with all that said, The reason, again, why we are here is to talk about the latest episode of The Boys. And one last thing, because I'm going to interrupt myself. If we get this done in a timely fashion, stay tuned. I will be giving some valuable information about, at least for me, because no one has even commented it online, because everybody sucks. For me, a highly anticipated series of podcasts we will be doing from, I think, late October on. So it's all predicated on how we move through this one, because I don't want to keep you guys listening to a podcast for another 3 hours again. Trust me, that ain't going to happen this time. Okay, so we are here to talk about the latest episode of The Boys, which was the fifth one of season two, and it was titled We Gotta Go Now. Thing I liked about this episode, and of course I like all episodes of this series, it's an episode that gave us a little bit of everything. You know, we got some nifty nods and satirical swipes at comic book movie making. We got some interesting revelations and insights into at least one, if not more, major characters. And we also did get at least one or two surprising and maybe even a little dark twists with a few other key players. So I think we should just zoom in and bang through all these three major talking points. And, you know, we'll probably hit on a few other happenings along the way, you know, whatever. We're not doing a straight-ass recap, because, again, you've all watched this more than once. And I know I say that and I end up recapping half the time anyway, but hopefully Jamie will keep me in check or something. So, yeah, because that's possible. So, be like, Scott, please stop talking. All right. So, first, because I always like to lead off with the fun stuff. The fun stuff in this episode was clearly the show was taking on like the DCEU movies to a certain slighter extent, maybe the Marvel ones too. But it really felt like they were mocking the Snyderverse pretty much more than anything else. I mean, when you have the episode literally opening with a colossal scene of mass destruction and all the colors are all muted and washed out, it's pure Snyderverse style. And they even throw in a Joss Whedon rewrite joke, you know, which is just like the twist of the knife. So even though I just decided to just, in my mind, not even consider the logic of, you know, it usually takes several weeks or even months to shoot a movie. And it seems like, are they all just going to do it in a couple days? I let that go because it's a fantasy. Who cares? But it seemed a little odd to me, I have to admit.
Yeah, almost as impressive as the fact that they thought that Maeve was going to be able to walk through that rubble in those boots, to which I say, absolutely no fucking way.
What kind of boots does Black Widow have? Anyway, because the scene of the destruction reminded me of like New York in the Avengers movie to a certain extent.
Well, I'm just saying that wedge heels, there's not a possibility. That's just broken ankles.
Well, that's why she's a superhero, Jamie.
Not even a superhero can do it. That's why they had that nice little spot for her to clean, like clean area for her to circle in.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I also love the fact because they kept cutting back to them either filming the movie or being on the set of the film. You know, we get a cameo that actually could be seen a number of different ways, because you see Greg Grunberg, the actor. He's an actor in the film, apparently. Now, one's first inclination is to say, hey, that's a cute little wink at Heroes, because he was probably that's probably his most noteworthy major role that he's had, even though he's been in a number of films and TV series over the years. And it might be the thing most people recognize him from. And, you know, the show was Heroes, so it kind of makes sense. But I also like to think he's known, you know, by people who pay attention or Hollywood, whatever. He's a longtime friend and buddy of J.J. Abrams. He's pretty much like the way Clint Howard shows up in every Ron Howard's movie, except without the sibling connection, or even how Bruce Campbell shows up in pretty much every Sam Raimi movie, because they grew up friends. That's kind of the Grunberg-Abrams connection. So I kind of thought it could be kind of a scene as a nod to J.J. Abrams, especially since the director of the Dawn of the Seven movie kind of feels a little bit Abrams-esque as well, except he's not wearing a suit.
Yeah, I can see it.
He kind of still has that feel to it. The other conceit, and this is where it was like meta within meta, and considering we're dealing with meta humans, it's even more you know, a pun. But it's not really a pun. You have A-Train, who's being fired from the Seven in real life, and his character is thus being retired in the film. Which I was like, huh, that's an interesting way to go about that. But
yeah, I like how they have this film that's going to be Maeve's coming out and A-Train's goodbye. Mm-hmm. It's like they're just going to put it all together in this packaged product.
Well, that's what those movies apparently are always for, I guess. But also, just continuing, just for one more moment, my theme of referencing other things where they're taking little pokes at or acknowledging things. And this one might be a stretch, but I'm going to say it's not. The A-Train's insistence on rewriting his own scene, not being happy with how he was being portrayed in the film, etc. Perhaps it's entirely coincidental because it does work for what's going on with his character, of course. However, it did make me recall issues with a few actors who have been troublesome on the set of superhero movies over the last several years. Infamously like Ed Norton on the Incredible Hulk movie. He was all about wanting like script rewrites and redoing. He practically wanted to direct the thing himself, I think. So he was a bit of a pain in the ass to deal with to a certain extent. And I was also thinking if they had threatened to replace A-Train, which is kind of what they're doing sort of anyway, in a weird way, it kind of would have been a little bit of a wink at the weird Terrence Howard, Don Cheadle situation that happened between Iron Man and its first sequel, where we're like, oh, you want more money? Oh, yeah, we're going to replace you. Bye-bye. But like I said, it was just interesting how they were able to work that into that storyline. But the thing that really, the unexpected moment that I kind of enjoyed most with the A-Train stuff was his little scene with Stormfront.
Oh, yeah. Can we just talk about how, we hate her. We're supposed to hate her. But I love how easy it is. It's almost like it's easy for her just to slam one after another. Just boom, boom, boom. It's just everything that comes out of her mouth is a hit.
Yes.
But she does it in such like a posh like way that just seems like casual conversation. But it's just these little moments, you know, like a couple extra seconds with the straw while she makes eye contact, stuff like that.
Right.
I really do enjoy pretty much any scene that she's in.
Oh, but she definitely lights up the scenes that she's in.
But that's some pretty hard stuff, you know. You thinking, here's this guy who's already going through a lot. You know, he's getting replaced. His identity is being squashed. I mean, he was, you know, in the League of Gods, and now he's going to be a has-been. And he's got her reminding him of the hatred in the world.
Right.
It's a pretty heavy little 2 minutes.
Yeah, and it's interesting because we get just a little bit more info on Stormfront, because apparently she had a past affiliation with the Church of the Collective years ago, which, as she tells us. But yeah, it's her little, you know, not so subtle, kind of insidious. She's very insidious with everything she says with different characters, whether it be the A-Train scene or her scenes with later with other characters later in the episode. But when she, I think the comment is, she was part of the Church of Collective, and then they started letting garbage in, and mm-hmm. you realize what she's saying, and I was like, whoa. So, in case you didn't pick up on the stuff with Liberty or how she treated Kimiko's brother, yeah, she's pretty much a full-blown racist.
Yep.
In case you hadn't picked
up on it. No questions. No questions there. She is.
It was also interesting that, you know, you also had A-Train playing off of Ashley, who, you know, they brought her back because now she's taken over Stillwell's position with Vought, whatever. But unlike the way she's essentially downright terrified of Homelander, and rightfully so, with A-Train, she's totally back to being her typically strong-willed, assertive self, pretty much putting him in his place. And, you know, I love how that scene basically does essentially a smash cut to him actually doing the scene as scripted. And it's a nice little Hollywood dig. The ultimate sign of disrespect is that you end up doing this important scene with someone else's stand-in. It's not even Homelander. It's his stand-in. He's doing the goodbye scene with.
Right.
I'm going, oh, he really doesn't give two craps about you, nope. Dude.
No, and I gotta say too with Ash, like I love her. She's very, like, she's like Cusick-y, you know.
Yes.
she brings some really great like Cusick energy, and I really am enjoying her character more and more.
Well, she's got a. Do you mean like when you say Cusick? Do you mean Cusack? Just to make sure.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Because you know we've got a Cusack on the show, so she can clearly just get reference points.
I know from her. That was very exciting to see her again, because I'm a fan. I'm a fan of that family. They make good stuff.
It's one of those things where I had, unlike, you know, her probably more celebrated and famous brother and sister, obviously I've seen that actress a number of times, but I had kind of forgotten who she was. Like, I didn't remember her by name. And even right now, I don't have her name in front of me. I know what her last name is. But but when I was watching season one and her first major dialogue scene with Annie, it had occurred to me right then and there. It's like, wow, she sounds like a Cusack. They looked like, oh, yeah, that's right. She's this. Oh, yeah. And I remember their connection. Oh, she's actually, doesn't she appear in Gross Point Blank at some point, I think? I think they all do. I don't know. Anyway, probably not. And we'll get a ding on that for a review. But speaking of her, that's perfect timing. Annie's mom shows up. And once again, Stormfront poking her nose in a little bit there and kind of letting, again, little insidious, sly little comments, which already are subtly saying, hey, guess what? I know what you did. So she's...
Right.
And, you know, and then, of course, that does lead to that confrontation between Annie or Starlight and Stormfront. Probably easier to say Annie and Stormfront than Starlight and Stormfront. Actually, I just said it. When Stormfront clearly knows about the whole Compound V deal, and then Annie reveals that she knows that she used to be Liberty, and it's good because we know that Starlight has some power. I'll be honest, I'm not super totally clear on exactly what her overall abilities are. I mean, even though I've seen them in action, maybe that's something I need to read up on or from the comic to see exactly if they have a list of what her actual abilities are. Cause I'm like, wait, can she, I don't think she can fly. So she can't do that. So she just makes big Nova waves of energy, perhaps. I'm not really clear on it. I think Stormfront, from what I've seen, especially when we get to the end of this episode, I'm pretty sure Stormfront kind of outclasses her on the power level. So she might be in a bit of trouble if she ends up picking a fight with Stormfront, I think.
All right. I've gone the wiki to see what we got here for her strength. She's got electromagnetic manipulation, high-powered energy bursts, bioluminescence, and she can produce really, really bright lights.
Oh, boy. So basically, you know, she's like a flash on a camera. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Me.
But the one thing I wanted to touch on before we move to the next section, whatever, and see if you have any thoughts on it, because I'm too stupid to have any myself. There's one little thing that Starlight, I knew I was going to get their names confused. There's one little thing that Stormfront says that made me kind of go, huh. Because she says something to her towards the end of that scene, just before Homelander shows up at the trailer and Annie leaves. She says something along the lines that Starlight is going to be useful to her. And I'm wondering what it is she's talking about. It's a little mystery. Like, what use would she have for her? I don't know what that means. So I'm kind of curious about that. I'm very curious about it, in fact.
Yeah, because I don't have a clue.
See, this is the kind of amazing insight and analysis we give you here. Neither of us have any idea.
Every single week, we don't know.
Yes. Can't imagine why we're not shooting at the chart.
Continuity counts for something.
Got an email from Amazon today. Say, hey, you want to put your podcast on our thing? I was like, do you really want us? Anyway. All right. So, All right. So, hey, you know what? It at least saved us a few minutes on the podcast. So yay for time. So since we're already talking about Stormfront, we can easily shift from her over to Homelander because we know that's going to lead right back to her anyway. Okay. I really got a huge kick out of what essentially was the Homelander storyline in this episode. I think it just touched on a number of things, especially after how the previous week kind of left us a little shaken with him. And it also exemplified, again, combined with the previous week's performance as well. We need to give this actor, Anthony Starr? Give this guy all the credit in the world. He's doing some really heavy lifting, no pun intended, on this show. He's really, I think, bringing it every episode that we watch.
Oh, yes.
I mean, just the villainy of this narcissistic sociopath. And it's an interesting, because it's when it comes down to there's such a major contrast between him and Stormfront. So it make, you know, and then when we get to the end of the episode and you realize they've both figuratively and literally have joined forces, so to speak, whatever you want to call what happens at the end of that episode, I'm thinking, okay, if these two are together on the same page and united, yeah, that's not good for anyone on this planet.
No, it's not.
So his whole storyline stems from that he was caught on a video, I guess, I wasn't sure if he accidentally wounded or mortally wounded an innocent bystander in what I'm assuming was Ethiopia, from a comment he makes when he basically nonchalantly zaps some rampaging super villain or super terrorist, as Edgar prefers. I'm not sure if he killed the other guy or not.
I'm assuming so. I'm pretty sure I could see his spine through his abdomen. So.
I'm going to go with you on that. Plus, this show, I don't see them holding back. It's like, yeah, you know.
Yeah, he looked pretty dead.
But I love that because, I mean, I love it. That's probably not the right way to put that. But that's so in line with Homelander's character and the way he's been since we first met him. Whether him going there and you know, just killing the terrorists without authorization or getting the okay, or what he does or him going to that protest, which might be my favorite moment in the entire episode.
Yeah, that was pretty nuts.
Okay, so to be clear, you knew from the get-go that was a fantasy in his head, right?
No, I didn't, actually. About like half a second into his temper tantrum, I realized it was, because there'd be nowhere for his character to go, like, at this point, if that was the case. That was a damn mess. I would hate to be the person that had to, like, get their street sweepers out there on that. That's no.
Well, you know what they would have done? They would have contacted the people filming the Dawn of Seven movie, because clearly they're used to dealing with a bunch of debris. It's like, hey, this is going to be a bit wetter than what you're dealing with.
Oh, my God. So, yeah, that was just nuts. I mean, it was great. But it really kind of brought me, not to bring in another series, but it reminded me a lot with, like, Umbrella Academy.
Yeah.
Okay. That whole take them all out with one power thing. But man, it was great to watch. I mean, it's awful, but great.
Oh, well, other than, you know, it's a nice visual to begin with, but
right. Also, yeah,
it so fits in with who he is, because when I refer to him as a sociopath, and that's actually one of the major differences, say, between his form of villainy, evil, whatever you want to call it, and say Stormfront. As we've acknowledged and said a few times already, Stormfront's a racist. And that's, you know, that's how she operates. That's how she views things and people and killing and whatever. He's not. He doesn't care about people, period. You know?
Right.
So
now, let me ask you a question. On when we're talking about Stormfront, and we've already declared, yes, the racism is there, but is she also, like, classist? You know what I mean? Like, is she the, like, people who have the powers, you know, are part of her family or she recognizes them to be like her, and anybody else who doesn't is also trash? You know, is it, do you think that she, I mean, is this a purebred wizard versus muggle thing? Or do you think she keeps her hatred divided in race alone?
My feeling so far is, from what I've seen of her, is, and obviously the next episode could prove this totally wrong, I feel it's more old school racism with her.
Right.
Only because of the way she is so absorbed in things such as, you know, social media and whipping up the crowds, you know, and getting the support and, you know, I mean, yes, that means she knows how to manipulate people, whatever, but she's also,
she's got that propaganda down,
but she also feeds off it. And it's interesting because that's something that her and Homelander to a certain extent do have in common. Because Homelander has this, you know, and this becomes kind of a debatable point in the show for his character. I mean, and I think they even say it in this episode, if I'm not mistaken. If I'm mistaken, I apologize. Didn't write a note on it. But it's his need. He has this, that whole need to be loved, or maybe in his case, more of a need to be worshipped kind of a thing.
Right.
And that's why it's funny, right? Because she know, I mean, if there was a perfect person to help you out with this, it's this chick here. Yes, I said chick. I don't care. Geek girls don't listen to my podcast. I don't care. So the podcast Geek Girl Soup, you know what I mean? Anyway. But I love just from the very get-go when they mentioned that he's down 9.5 points. And I'm starting to think, wait, what do they mean by 9.5 points? Is it just do they just keep a Q rating thing going on with popularity? You know, is there actually a website with, you know, celebrity stock rising and falling? I love the fact that was quantifiable and how it would relate to probably everything, you know, popularity, money, et cetera. I thought it was very...
That, and it's the first time we ever saw him actually kind of show some fear.
That's true.
When she was like, you know, we're down, he's like, what? And he sees how many points he's dropped. He was like, oh, shit. Like, it's the first time you see him be like, I don't know what to do with this.
Right. Which is essentially what leads him to take her and go to her for help. And then we have, like, you know, Stormfront, or essentially Stormfront teaching him, you know, the ins and outs of social media memes.
Right. Oh, my God. That was really funny. Those memes were great.
Oh, and again.
they're like, every time they show her and her meme team, you know, I'm probably going to be amused most of that time.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and I love it because it's definitely a show that is more and more unexpectedly, it's got its fingers on the pulse of what's going on in the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
Today. I mean, it's so dead
on. I mean, that is something literally every single one of us encounter every single day of our life, you know?
And quite frankly, we do it ourselves.
We could avoid it, but we choose not to.
Right. I should mention, because it happened a little bit earlier, but because I said from the get-go, one of the interesting things about this, many interesting things about this episode, is that they drop a few mysteries on us that we can spend time either on this podcast or just in our general lives, speculating on what does that mean? What is that? When are we going to find out about that? And in this episode, we have that moment before, I think it's before she starts showing him how to do the meme stuff, where we just see her on the phone with someone. And I recognize the actor. It's Sean Ashmore. I've seen him in a number of things over the years, and Smallville, among other things. I think he was Jimmy Olsen in Smallville. And all you can pick up on from the scene is he appears to be, he looks like he might be a nurse because he's got like the scrubs on,
right,
and a tag on.
And it looks like they're at Sage Grove Center. Kind of looks like, yeah. I saw a sign that said ward, so maybe like a mental health hospital.
Well, they were saying something about him having to do something. They're talking about like a 17-year-old. So you don't know, is this like a mercy death situation? You know, something more insidious than that. I said insidious again. Something more dark. Yeah, I don't know if it's a mental health-ish place, like what you're saying, which might make a heck of a lot of sense, especially if there's someone who had to deal with Stormfront. Or if it's something, I don't know. It could be someone who also is a... do they act a super themselves? I guess that's the term they use on this show. It seems like they're piling up the mysteries about Stormfront from episode to episode. You know, how can she still be this person? How can, what's the connection? Where was she from 1979 to now? How did she, you know, how can she still look like that? Is she immortal? Is she a shapeshifter as well? Is there something else going on with her genetically speaking we haven't thought of? You know, does Edgar have the goods on her? So he, you know, I'm very interested, very intrigued by it, and which I wasn't when I first met her initially. I thought she was cool, but I didn't really think there was going to be that much to the character, and now I realize there's a lot to that character.
Right. There sure is.
And unfortunately for Jamie, it was so cool at the end of the previous podcast where you kind of surprised me with your theorizing about the possibility.
Hey, maybe I'm just going to put this out there. She's a racist. She's hateful. She may have come from a mental ward. I'm still sticking with there's a possibility. Might be minute, okay. But there is a possibility.
So just to be clear, because I have a feeling that other than you and me, the folks listening might not be remembering.
Nobody what I'm talking else about. Made it to the end.
yeah, I guess after 18 hours of podcasting, Jamie more than alluded to the possibility that Stormfront might turn out to be Homelander's mom. And now, maybe purely genetically speaking or something, which is, I will say, is still a possibility because this show is
related.
This show is dark. They could go down that path. It just becomes 100 times creepier in light of how the episode ends.
You know, it does, but like after, you know, the last, you know, five, you know, 6 years, whatever, we have so many shows that have kind of taken that idea and said, well, as long as they're kind of bad guys, no one cares anymore.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I mean, let's just be brutally just out there with it. I don't know about banging your mom. I know the banging your sister like thing in Game of Thrones.
I don't think it will be quite as like, for one, they don't, well, he wouldn't know, that were the case. He's unaware.
But she would. That's the thing. And look.
But she's also psycho. Right. So, you know.
All I'm going to say.
Minute.
Even in porn, they draw the line and they make sure they always make it clear in the opening minutes, it's a stepmom. It's always, it's always an adopted kid. They always make that clear because they never want to go quite that far. It's like, really?
Yes,
really?
Yes.
Because, you know, if I'm watching that, you know, you're still saying mommy. Anyway. And speaking of mommy, because Homelander is actually, wow. Probably he might be the biggest mama's boy
that we've ever watched. Yeah, he really is.
Any show right now.
Truly is. But I gotta say, I found it really amusing that they were, in the end, they were both pantless, but not capeless.
Oh, no, yeah, that's the last thing you take off. I mean, that's, you never
like
take off the cape.
Crack it up, I'm like, hey. They still got the capes.
It all goes back to Superman the movie, and they ask when Otis walks over to Superman and ask him if he can take his cape, and he just glares at him. Say, you never take the cape.
You don't touch the cape.
I just pulled it out of my ass. So he's a mama's boy, and he's got issues with strong women. It's pretty much you've seen that from season one and throughout season two. You know, his issues with Stillwell and even Queen Maeve up to a certain point, which certainly then comes to the last couple episodes, we've been seeing more of that, certainly. And then you have this woman who's spearheading the protest movement. So I think because he has these issues with these women, that's why he takes the opportunity to be extra domineering to the likes of, say, like Ashley or Annie, because he feels sure. He can, and even the Queen Maeve situation, which we can talk about a little bit later on or now, whatever. He likely feels in his own warped, you know, sense of self, almost emasculated, because Maeve is now with a woman when she was with him before. So therefore, that's why he's going to punish her. I mean, that's the way I'm reading that, at least.
Yeah, but could you imagine what he would do to her if her secret lover was a man?
I believe it would go a different way.
Yes, I agree. I think because I feel like he's still sort of in the mindset of, well, isn't that cute?
Right.
You know, he's not taking her seriously because he's never taken her seriously. He doesn't take women seriously.
But I think if it was a man, the punishment would be something more severe. Like he would probably kill the guy.
Absolutely.
This, he's going to punish them with with what he perceives as humiliation.
Yes.
And forcing them to go through, you know, these, you know, playing puppet master to a certain degree with their lives because he's a god. That's what they're supposed to be able to do, you know? Even though
and Queen Mae's not supposed to be a god too. Not only is she in love with a woman, but she's in love with somebody that has no powers, no desire to have powers, and no interest in the people that have powers.
Right, which probably makes it even worse. I mean, well, doesn't probably. It does make it worse.
Right.
Let's edit that probably right out. Snip, snip.
Absolutely does.
So we got the Homelander stuff. We've got the... Oh, we kind of left out Billy Butcher. We got to switch gears and talk about Billy Butcher here. This is the episode where I feel we get to know the Butcher family, at least to a certain degree, or even if it's just by the spoken word. You know, we meet his perfectly lovely and apparently drug-dealing auntie. We hear about his mom and dad, and maybe most intriguingly, we hear about his brother Lenny. Kind of made me sad. I was wishing Butcher's first name was actually George at that point.
Get but, the rabbits.
Yeah, there you go. But Huey apparently reminds Butcher's aunt of Lenny, and I think even by the time we get to the end of the episode, despite some things that happened during the episode, we actually see another new or just a new bond that's established between Huey and Butcher, you know, because these two have been quite contentious with each other for a while now.
And can we talk about before he ends up at his aunt's house, the scene where he's in the club?
Oh, the punk club.
And he and he walks into, you know, he walks into the crowd and just starts a fight because he's just looking for something to physically manifest the insaneness that's going on inside of him. But I bring it up because the scene where everyone finally starts jumping him in the crowd and he's on the ground and you just see all these feet kicking him, that shot was so beautiful. And I have not read the comics, but I'm willing to bet that if we were to go back through it, that there is an exact panel of that shot. It was perfect.
It's a very well shot and powerful moment to really just give us an insight into how he feels about himself. And so it's not just a situation as far as what Becca has done and whatever. He's still blaming himself. And even how that whole thing came down, because he knows he can't accept, you know, the fact that she's got, you know, a super son, you know.
A soup freak son.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. It was interesting because, since I'm going to take a page from your book, just again, whipping this one out, so to speak, how you mentioned earlier a scene you could kind of made a connection to something from Umbrella Academy. And I'm going to do that now because it reminds me of a scene, and how different they are. I think it's season one, obviously, of Umbrella Academy where, oh gosh, did that gigantic podcast? Now I got to remember his name. Luther?
The big guy?
Yeah, the big guy.
Yeah, I think it's Luther.
Oh, thank God.
I'm awful with names, so we're going to help.
How embarrassing is it if after doing a 3-hour podcast on the Umbrella Academy, I kind of forgot one of the major characters?
Yeah, names. It's Luther. You're good. You're good. It is.
All right. Basically, Luther gets hit with some horrible, life-shattering news about, you know, and what he had thought was all, you know, a lie and whatever, and why he was on the moon and whatever. And one thing leads to the other, and he ends up in a club. And he's in a club to forget, you know, whatever, and what he does there. But he enters a period of just pure bliss being there. And he just wants to be, and whereas Billy Butcher, he goes to a club, and this is what he does.
Right.
I just love that it's the stark contrast. I mean, obviously they're very different characters, but it's just, but they're both, you know, people who got hit with just really horrible news, and it just changes their perspective of, or could possibly change the perspective of what they've thought for years and what are they going to do now? Because at this point, like what, at this point in time, what is Billy Butcher going to do now? If his wife doesn't want to go with him, that's what his life has been built on all this time. So right. It's, I mean, and, you know, you took your shot or shots at trying to bring Homelander down and doesn't seem to be happening yet. And until the show comes up with an actual kryptonite for this character, I'm not sure how you're going to pull that off. I look forward to when they do come up with that idea. I'm dying for it. I'm betting there is some form of a kryptonite on the show. So question, because it's stemming from, again, it is earlier in the episode, so before he goes to his aunt's house. It's the thing when he's talking to Huey on the phone, and then later Huey is relaying the conversation to Mother's Milk, and he says that Butcher had called Huey his canary.
Yes.
My question is: is it simply they're making like kind of like a canary in a coal mine kind of a reference? You know, so
I think that it might be double. I think that it definitely has that to it. You mm-hmm. know, where he kind of is his sounding board for when is too much.
Right.
But also, you know, maybe there's something to it as, you know, as his pleasantry as well.
Hmm. Is it, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's when Huey mentions the canary line. That's what makes Mother's Milk suddenly react to it. That's
when he when he was watching an episode of a show he likes to call Eat My Dick. or, you know, Outlander for those who
I love that. You know. I love that character so much.
So great. That's what that show is going to be called from now on. So I'm just letting everyone know.
I see your dog approves. So she said dick, not dog. Anyway, speaking of dogs, one of the family members I left out that we meet when he goes to his aunt's house, that's why the dog is all excited, because he knows I'm going to mention him. The plush-humping bulldog Terror, who actually, this I do know, is from the comics.
Okay, I figured he had to have been.
He actually, and from what I understand, and it's not very much, but I believe the dog Terror plays a bigger part in the comics. I think he might have been with him all along, and this is the first time we've actually seen him on the show. So that was maybe because they didn't want to deal with him having a dog on the show. I don't know. I think that's the story. If I'm wrong, I apologize. You know, say it on Facebook. But I'm pretty sure I'm right about that. So yeah, and I love meeting the aunt. I thought she was a great character. It's hardly unexpected that he doesn't get along or doesn't want to deal with his mom and dad. That's not a shocker.
No.
I almost wish that they had gone in a totally opposite direction, because that would have been the shock of that. Like if he had like a super loving mom and dad that he loved, whatever, that would have been interesting. You know what? They may be loving and he just doesn't acknowledge it for all we know.
Right. You know, his little brother seemed to be, you know.
Yeah.
Seemed to be a pretty good kid with a good heart.
And the story she tells, it's one of the few heartwarming things in relation to this character that we've ever heard or seen. So, yeah, I keep imagining that he has, like, really nice parents. They're like James Corden's parents on the Late Late Show or something. Like, yeah, oh, they're right. Perfectly lovely. Oh, and meanwhile, of course, plot-wise, during all this, Black Noir has actually tracked him down. So we get that rather one-sided fight. I love
that. But you know, that the entire scene while they are down in the bunker, I thought it was so great, because I thought it was actually kind of scary. Like there was they managed to make it where it was like just a little bit nerve-wracking, because here they are down in this bunker. And if you've ever been someplace that has something like that, you feel pretty secure and safe down in something, mm-hmm. you know, that doesn't have windows and has secret doors. And to just to know what was going on in the house above for it to cause such an effect down where they were. And when they first step up into the upstairs and then they see the house is just gone.
Right.
I thought it was really cool. They were able to get a little bit more menacing with it than I thought it was going to go.
Right. And plus we're dealing with a series where because we're, even if this series is still following the comics to whatever, even though they are making very significant changes, so it probably doesn't even matter, quite frankly, as we detailed. Are those dogs on my end or your end? Wow.
They're not here.
Oh, there's dogs outside. I don't know. It's usually cats appear on the podcast. This one,
yeah, it's
dogs.
A weird night.
My cat was braying his ass off before we started recording, and now I think he's curled up somewhere for a change, miraculously. If we were recording later, he'd probably be meowing again. Anyway, what was I going to say? Where did I derail my thought there?
Physically different than the comic.
But where I was going with that was, in any given week, other than possibly Huey or Butcher themselves, I feel anyone else could conceivably be killed off. If all of a sudden we turn around and all of a sudden Mother's Milk gets killed, I would be very upset. Love the character, love the actor, and it would be shocking, but it wouldn't be shocking for the show to do that, is what I mean. Or whoever else was there. Or if they killed the aunt, even though we only seen that one episode, that would be horrible. The dog would be the most shocking thing, of course, because it's always the most shocking thing if you kill a dog, because, you know, no one likes
it. Yeah, that makes everyone upset.
But I dug the moment. So Noir is about to kill him. He's you know, doing the classic holding up by your throat, you know, doing the Vader thing, whatever. And, you know, Butcher, gasping for life there, threatens that he's going to be able, you know, if he's dead, they'll blackmail Vought Industries because they're going to release this information that Homelander actually, you know, raped Becca and that whole situation. And then the phone rings and Black Noir answers it. And my first thought was, I love that Black Noir has a phone, but he never talks.
Right? Like, is he going to say something?
So I'm assuming it's always just going to be, for Noir, it's always just going to be a one-way conversation. So why not have a pager? But yeah, we get that great moment with, you know, Giancarlo speaking. And basically, I guess they let them go. It was very odd that, you know, they're at the little bit of a stalemate, at least for now. So Black Noir lets them live and he leaves. And I was like, okay, you're leaving them just to have to deal with this issue another day, I guess.
Right.
So, because they're still fugitives on the run and they're still, you know, they still know they're trying to bring them down.
I think it also shows how loyal Black Noir is. Because he just destroyed the hell out of that house. He waited around. For how long did he have to wait around while the gas was, you know, where they cleared the emergency of what they thought was a gas leak and they left, you know, the onlookers that would have been there had left. So he waited it out. He destroyed this house. He had him in his grasp. He was ready to kill him. And one phone call and he was like, bloop, dropped him and walked out.
Well, it makes perfect sense because we, unlike any other character, as far as the soups are concerned, we know nothing about Black Noir.
Right.
And so the fact that he may just be a total, complete instrument or tool of Vought Industries and nothing else without any personality beyond that, other than the moment of him sobbing, you know, beyond that, none of that is surprising to me. Again, it's one of those things. I'm so tempted to look into this, and I don't want to be spoiled on it, because I'm assuming since the comic ended years ago, they most likely did eventually give an explanation for Black Noir. You know, there might have been an explanation from him from the get go. For all I know, the character is different in the show, and maybe he does talk occasionally. Maybe he's more of a Batman like character on the comic. I don't know. I've not read it. Just did research to it and read certain pages and stuff. But yeah, he would be the one that I think, would be the most, their instrument of destruction more than anyone else. Cause, you know, obviously Queen Maeve has got, you know, kind of wants to think for herself at certain points. Homelander certainly does. And, you know,
well, they all seem to kind of have their own personal agenda.
Yeah.
And maybe Black Noir does too, but we're not privy to it. But it doesn't seem like there is a personal agenda.
No. We don't know what he is, quite frankly. I still think we take off that mask and it's going to be something we're not expecting at all. And I don't think he's a black dude. I don't think he's a dude. That's
that they assume. we assume he is. That. So can we also just mention that Huey is the worst shot in the entire world? And what great friends Butcher has, because they both bust in, you know, guns blazing. And Huey doesn't land one bullet.
No, not one.
Except for the one in his hand.
Right. We've established Huey being a horrible shot before, where it is like,
yeah.
I think it was right. During the escape scene in season one. Like,
yes.
You're not even trying to aim.
I just love it. Like, he knows that he's not good with guns. He knows, but you know what? Damn it, his friend's in trouble. And just, again, it's just, how can you not love Huey? He's such a good guy.
Yeah. And he's a Billy Joel fan who, my friends who are now watching the series, well, one person has actually already seen the first season, but now his wife, who's my best friend, is now watching with him. I think they're maybe five episodes into season one. God damn it for them noticing something that I probably just noticed and just didn't give any thought to and forgot about and never mentioned it on the podcast. And so I'm going to mention it now, and I'm going to give them full credit for it. So the Collins, you know, congratulations. Whenever you get to this podcast, look, I mentioned you by name. And, you'll be like, and they'll be like, yay, great, they hate me. Huey has spent an inordinate amount of time talking about how he's a big Billy Joel fan. He's talked about Billy Joel. He's also meant referenced James Taylor, you know. But it's usually those are the artists he keeps mentioning. It's always Billy Joel, James Taylor. I think there was one other one, like, in that ilk. And yet, he always wears shirts that are certainly not in that category of music. He's got shirts with, you know, the Ramones and different punk bands and whatever. I mean, maybe he and Robot Man from Doom Patrol. I know you haven't seen it, but, you know, fans will know what I'm talking about. Maybe they shop at the same fucking rock t-shirt store. But his shirts, but I just find it interesting, and this is the point they were pointing out, that he kind of projects one kind of persona with what he's wearing, but when you actually talk to him, it's a totally different kind of a thing.
Right. That's a very good point.
And I hadn't thought of that, and I just wanted to give him credit for pointing that out.
I will give them credit for that insight, because that's good. But I also will throw out there that punk t-shirts are really big in wardrobe, like TV screen wardrobes these days.
Right. Yes, they are. Well, again,
it's very fashionable.
Again, Doom Patrol.
Yes. Yes.
I know you haven't watched. There's literally a scene where the Robot Man character is planning to go to a wedding, and he has all laid out all these different rock t-shirts, trying to pick out which one he's going to wear to a wedding. that's how much it is part of that character. Okay. So, back to the episode. I mean, there's a few other little things about the episode. The stuff with the Deep, I'm still very much finding fascinating. He's going on his PR tour at this point in the episode with his
new wife. And his little Katie Couric interview.
Katie Couric, he's on Extra. He's doing infomercial ads. He's doing a book signing, and the book is clearly a takeoff on Dianetics. It's called, like, Destination. So they even got
And that video that they did for it, the little video clip, that was absolutely to a T to the Dianetics video. I mean, it was – they couldn't – all they would have had to do is change the title on it, and it would have worked.
Right. So, again, it's still kind of – forming a semi-comic relief on the show, although I feel it is building up to something more. And it certainly is when you see Queen Maeve show up. So again, I talked about how this episode keeps dropping these little mysteries for me to wonder and think about, or not just me, all of us to think about and wonder. So we saw Queen Maeve earlier in the episode when she was talking to Is the girlfriend's name? Is it Elena? I think it's Elena.
Yes.
And I think it's to her. Here's where we get our explicit rating on the podcast. When she actually says, we're going to take that motherfucker down. And then she shows up at the signing and she agrees that she's going to help, you know, like vouch for the deep so he can get back into Seven or whatever, even though she, you know, clearly thinks he's a piece of
loads him. Yep.
But as long as he has to help her. And then I'm going, how is the deep going to possibly be of any help in her trying to do something about Homelander? It's like Stormfront saying how useful Starlight will be to her. I'm like, how is that going to work? This made me even wonder more. It's like, what's the deep going to do? Is going to help you? But so again,
he's not known for being really, really high IQ'd. No. So it's not like there's a lot of behind the scenes, you know, things. I just can't even imagine.
Yeah. That's why I thought this was a very interesting episode, because they keep dropping, you know, in the midst of all these, there's all these little, I wonder about that now. I wonder about that. Like, wait, did they bring in Carlton Cuse and Lindelof to do this episode? With all these, you know, do we need more, magical boxes? No. Anyway. So that was interesting. Yep, go on.
The way that they, you know, when they were going through, like the PRs going through with her and Elena too, and talking about how they want Elena to dress and how they want her presented. And it's so sad because she's like, do I not have a say in this? You know, and she looks to Maeve and Maeve has nothing because she knows, like, you're in now. And unless we can fight our way out, like you're going to have to do what they say.
Yeah. I mean, she is, you know, part and parcel, part of the corporate structure of Vought. So it's kind of like she doesn't have any say in the matter.
It goes back to that collateral damage. So I think it's so great that they actually have collateral damage therapy sessions. You know, in the first season, you'll see it a lot.
Right.
Because it is everywhere.
Right.
I mean, in every aspect.
And we've already seen with Vought, the company, and Edgar specifically, Homelander tried to take him on and pretty much ended up leaving the office with a dumbass look on his face. if he can't change anything with them, no one can. That's pretty much it as far as they're concerned, I think. The other thing that happened in the episode, which I really I know it'll be significant. It didn't interest me enough to want to talk that much about, really, was Frenchie pursuing Kimiko going around town, and we find out that she's been like doing hits, you know, with the Albanian mob and stuff. I do like the Albanian mob talking about Hamilton. I did enjoy that.
That's like a thing. Like, musicals are a pretty, you know, pretty big deal there. So like, I love that they're sitting there having this conversation and, you know,
well, it's also perfectly timed because
so relatable. Yeah. Because like everybody who ever thought that they might watch Hamilton has pretty much watched it at this point.
Exactly. If this was a year earlier, then no, because there's only people who were lucky enough to see it on stage. Thanks to Disney Plus, you know, another 50 million people in the country have seen it, or 100 million, whatever, however crazy number it is.
And Miranda has made trillions of dollars.
Yeah. Yay. Oh, yay for him. Yes, absolutely yay for him. I thought, like, what woman named Miranda? Oh, Miranda Richardson? Oh, yeah.
You're like, oh, okay.
And, you know, that's pretty much the episode. Again, I was having that conversation with someone last night, actually, about the whole Amazon deciding to drop each episode each week instead of all together. And I was pointing out something that has been happening. And I was watching some daily video cast that, you know, covers like all the new geeky news and whatever. And the guy was actually giving an opinion on something. And I was like, you are so right. I forget which vidcast it was. It was like the Daily Comic Book something. I don't remember. He pointed out something that people are doing, and I don't really need more proof how stupid people are anymore. I really don't. And this, you know, I'm not just talking about the last few years, so I'm not talking about politics at all, just in general. But this is how stupid people are. unlike last year, we all know Amazon decided to release 3 episodes and then release the next 5, 1 a week. And I was not aware of any article or anything like that beforehand that told us they were going to do this. Though there might have been. I just might have missed it.
I didn't see anything either.
But a lot of, and now as a result, there were any number of people who were kind of upset about this. People would thought they were going to, you know, be able to do a huge binge watch it all that weekend, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And you know what? It's okay to be upset about that or be annoyed about it. I get it. You were planning it one way and then you had to change things. We were planning to do an entire podcast that was going to cover seasons 1 and season 2. We had to change that and make it break it into, you know, like the podcast you're listening to right now. That's fine. You know what's not fine? Going on to websites such as, you know, obviously Rotten Tomatoes and things of that ilk where there is a rating system for the show. And you might rave about the show, but you also are bitching about the what they did with the episodes, whatever. But then you decide to give it some super crazy low rating. You decide to give it a 0 or whatever the heck the thing is. And you lower the overall score for the show. Do you think that helps matters? I got news for you. It really doesn't. It makes things worse. It makes it really bad. Because here's what happens. It's cool that the people who watched Boys Season 1 came back to watch Boys Season 2. Like us, right? But there's a lot of people who never saw The Boys. And maybe they heard about it. But then the first thing many people do nowadays is they go online. They click on it like, oh, what did it get in Rotten Tomatoes or whatever? Because they don't feel like reading articles. They just want a quick, it's got a 90, it's 90% fresh. I'm going to watch that. If they go there and it says, you know, 38% fresh or 25% fresh, they're not going to want to check it out. They're not going to be bothered reading all the reviews. They're not going to do that. The same with if you do the lower the ratings on IMDb or whatever. If that's been going on with the 100 for like several years now. The problem is, yes, it's fortunately this show has already been renewed for a season 3. That's already in the books. It's going to happen. But it doesn't have a season 4 lined up already. And, you know, this kind of behavior can impact the show. It can lower the overall viewership. And then you get the execs who are going to go, oh, well, look at the rating it's getting. And people aren't coming into what? They're not going to renew it. We've all seen, even the streaming services, even in some ways even more so, can be rather cold about this. You know, everyone was excited about the OA season 2, and finally it was better than season 1, and had a bunch of cliffhangers on it, and you all thought you were going to get season 3, and then, nope, guess what, they pulled the plug.
Yep. Sense8 is a great example. Sense8 has a huge fandom. But with these silly ratings, and whatever else in the world, it got abruptly canceled. Of course, there was so much outrage about it. They brought it back for like one big movie episode or whatever to at least try to end the story. But it happens all the time. And even shows that are fairly popular get the axe.
Yeah, it's just... Anyway, I apologize for spending maybe a few more minutes than I meant to on that, but I just wanted to get it out there right when we were hitting the hour mark, because it's like, oh, this is actually a perfect time for me to say it. So just basically, don't do that.
Don't be a dick.
Yeah, you want to give our podcast 0 stars, fine, but don't do it to the show because we got lots of great ratings, we still don't get more listeners, so it doesn't.
Don't treat the show like a fuck pig.
Jesus. Okay. All right. Yes, I know we never made a reference to the fuck pig in the episode. Lordy. All right. So I am going to take the opportunity now because we look at that. We did things in a somewhat timely fashion for a change. If you all have been listening for an hour, listen for a few more minutes because I am actually going to reveal some news that I talked about very minutely online on our Facebook page. And what I'm talking about is a planned series of podcasts that we will be doing, and it will be under the Serious TV Drama Podcast banner, because why wouldn't it be? It's probably going to commence, I think I have it scheduled late October. Maybe the first episode will be like October 23rd or something like that. and it's called, you know, the greatest TV drama episodes of all time. And now people probably saw that if they actually clicked on the little schedule I made for the year. I don't know how many people even looked at it. But you might be wondering, okay, what does that mean? You're going to do a podcast on the greatest TV drama episodes of all time. Okay, here's what we're going to do. We are going, this is going to be a series of 20 episodes. Each episode is going to cover one specific, each podcast, I should say, is going to cover one episode of television that I'm going to cull together a number of articles, because it's been done in any number of publications, you name it. Entertainment Weekly, TV Guide, you know, I'm sure Seppenwall has done it at one point or another. He's done it in books and whatever, where they pull together a list of, you know, the greatest TV episodes of all time. I'm going to go through those. I'm also going to go through, and I've already started this, by the way, so I'm not just saying I'm going to. The process has begun. I'm also going to look at every specific series of the 20, and because there are, again, a number of places where those episodes are ranked. There are articles specific. Well, say hypothetically, we'll take like my favorite show of all time, like Breaking Bad. There are a million articles out there that have lists of, you know, the 10 greatest Breaking Bad episodes. Or you can go back and then you look at the ratings on IMDb, which is kind of bullshit, but, you know, I'll still use it as just one of many tools. I'm going to put all that together. Will there be a little bit of Scott bias in the mix? It's my podcast. Of course there will be. Come on.
Duh.
Duh. I'm not professing to be Reuters here, you know. a couple rules going into it. It's going to be 20 different series. So no show will have more than one episode appearing in the podcast. So that means there's only going to be, we'll take a couple of shows that you know are going to be in there. There's only going to be one Sopranos episode. There's only going to be one Breaking Bad episode or one Lost episode or whatever show is in the 20. As far as what the 20 shows are, I'm going to give one hint, and that's going to be it. If you're curious to know what the 20 TV series are, if you go to our Facebook page, and it's preferably on a computer, not your iPhone. Maybe you can do it on your iPad, I guess. But best on a computer, because you have a nice large screen that way. And you click on our cover photo, because our cover photo is all these different shows, you know, the logo screens, whatever you want to call them, the opening credits, whatever. I can tell you right now, unless I'm mistaken, I'm pretty sure I'm right about this, 18 of the 20 TV series that will appear in this, you know, these 20 episodes, or 20 podcasts, I should say, appear in that picture. The two that, and the clue, and the additional clue, just to help with the, you know, for all 20, the two that don't, coincidentally, both feature the same actor. That's a little trivia for you. No guessing. so that's all I'm going to say as far as what the shows are. No, the list will not be revealed to you guys ahead of time. You will never see the list, you know, until all the 20 shows are over. What we will be doing, or what I will be doing, I guess, every week I will announce on the Facebook page, what the next episode is going to be covered. So that way, if you guys want to go, they're going to do, you know, whatever episode of, well, since I said The Sopranos before, whatever episode of Sopranos, I've got a week to watch it on my own, and then I can listen to the podcast. Or, you know, obviously, if you're someone who's never watched The Sopranos, you may very well just want to skip that week because you're not going to watch a random episode of a show that you've never seen before. But for those who have watched The Sopranos, it'll be kind of a fun thing to do. And that applies to all the 19 other series as well. There will be some obvious choices. You guys can already guess what's in there. There will be some choices you might be a little surprised by. I can think of one for sure I think people will be surprised by. I think it'll be kind of a fun project to engage in. As far as co-hosts, I'm probably going to have different people depending on what they've seen. Because, for example, Dan will certainly co-host a number of these. However, there's a lot he's not going to be able to co-host because he hasn't seen the TV series before. Like, I know he'll do Battlestar Galactica with me if that should happen to be in the top 20. But he wouldn't do The Sopranos, for example, because he's never seen The Sopranos. You know, so I will reach out to people at least a few weeks in advance to try to, you know, find just the right host for the right episode for each one. So obviously, you know, it could be Dan, it could be Brian, it could be Jamie, of course. It could be a number of other folks that have appeared in the podcast over the years. You know, I bet I'm going to try to reach out to Court for one, maybe one of the Geek Girls for something. Maybe I don't have any Jason, maybe any, who knows? Maybe a surprise me. But that's the way it's going to work. I think that's pretty much everything I have to say about it. Anything, I can't think of anything that doesn't make sense. Everything pretty clear on that?
Makes sense to me.
All right. So that is the plan. Oh, I forgot the other rule. I did leave something out. I knew I'd forget something. Like I said, every series appears only once on the list. Here's another thing. And I had to think long and hard about this one, and I decided this is how it has to be done. No episode of television that's already been covered by this podcast is going to appear on this list. Yes, that means, I hate to say it, Better Call Saul is not going to be in the top 20. It's not that they don't deserve to be in the top 20. This is where the personal bias has to come in. It's just we've already covered every episode of Better Call Saul. The same, you know, the same way, if the final season of Game of Thrones was actually any good, none of those episodes could appear. You know, whatever, you know, or nothing from Legion can be in there, or seasons 2 and 3 of Fargo. That doesn't mean season 1 of Fargo is a possibility, you know. You never know. It's in there. So, yeah, I gave you guys a couple there. Be happy. But anyway, I just thought that was the best way to go about it. Fortunately, we cover a lot of crap, so it's not going to come up. I kid us. So that's basically it. I believe those police sirens are a signal from the world to start wrapping things up. That's New York for you. I'm sure that's here, not Joplin.
30 Missouri. Seconds.
30 seconds. So with all that said, if you enjoyed this podcast, guess what? You'll enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's the Series TV Drama Podcast page. Like the page and you can join conversations about shows like The Boys and all the shows I just mentioned and more. And it's also where you can go to find out information about that series of podcasts I just mentioned. You know, you just go there, just check out that cover photo. It's pretty cool. You can also follow us. Let's see. Oh, I skipped ahead. Who cares? You can follow us on Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. It's where we send out links and every once in a blue moon, maybe we'll comment on something. I should have sent out a comment about the Emmys last night. I forgot. You can follow Apple Podcasts. That's basically the place where you find us now, mainly. You can subscribe to our feed and rate and review us there. Heck, if you just punch us into Google, you'll find us 8,000 other places. But the best place, I always think, is to go to stvdpodcast.podbean.com, because all 270 of our podcasts are there. A few might say the word forbidden and they don't seem to work. I think if you try it a few more times, it will work. And if it doesn't, I'm sorry. I don't know why that's happening. But that's pretty much it. So, Jamie, once again, thank you so much for joining me talking about The Boys.
You bet. It was a great episode. It was fun to cover.
Absolutely. We will be back next week with the next episode of The Boys. And we will also, just probably a day before that, once I actually get on the honker to either Dan or Brian to figure out which one of them is actually going to be available, we will be releasing a podcast in a week's time that will be covering the Sunday night premiere of Fargo season 4. It's actually going to be 2 episodes. It's crazy. And only because Jamie told me in advance she's not available on Sunday nights, that's why you're not among the possible co-hosts. Otherwise, I'd be making...
I might show up for one. If there's an episode I really like, I might be like, hey.
All right, you could be a surprise guest star cameo.
Tune me in for just a second here.
Okay, that works out just fine. But then you have to speak like Marge. Anyway.
I need to bring the roots back out and...
Yeah,
you gotta start getting that northern accent in full effect.
You got to get the betches and all prepared. Anyway, so yeah, we'll before the boys podcast comes out in a week's time, hopefully, unless everyone bags out on me, we should be doing the Fargo season 4 premiere podcast as well. So that's it for me. Again, Jamie, muchas gracias for joining the podcast as always. And I'll say goodnight to everybody out there, and I'll let you finally have the last word.
The last word is, I don't know. I don't have one. I don't have a last word. We'll see you next week.
All right. Good night.